Howdy, everybody, and welcome to another episode of this podcast that you're listening to. With me, as always, are my co-hosts, Joshua.
I was honestly really ready for you to call it by the wrong name because you keep calling it that.
What wrong name do I... Oh, do I keep calling it? Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, you keep calling it the Diecast, and it's like, no, Rutskin, it's not the name of it anymore. It's not even technically the same podcast, although it basically is.
Yeah, basically, until this podcast reaches its final form and crawls out of the pod chrysalis and spreads its pod wings and flies off.
I like that idea, where it's a work in progress.
Yep, it's basically the protagonist of, like, a cheesy 90s comedy who just, like, needs the right person to come along and free it from its dodgy old roots into a new fun-loving self. And I think just the person to do that is, of course, our resident manic pixie dream critic, Chris Franklin.
Hello, everyone loves me and I'm happy and I'm a ball of pet manic, happy, cute energy because I can't keep this up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you tried.
It's fine. Alex, the only role we've got left is stodgy old boss who's, like, obsessed with money and the bottom line. Does that work for you?
It's completely unlike me, but I can pull it off, I think. It's just bills and checks and the like, you know.
Okay, yes. You need some kind of catchphrase or, like, some kind of, like, prop that you use to symbolize, like, the drudgery of the job that you inflict on Chris. No, Josh, that's right.
Wait, what role am I again?
You're the protagonist. I've just decided that I'm your fun-loving friend.
Well, I'm the protagonist of real life anyway, so...
No one has yet disproven this. Anyway, so this week, apparently Josh has been playing the same video game that he was playing last time that he talked about.
I did want you around to talk about it with, because you hated XCOM 2 Vanilla just as much as I did.
I hated XCOM 2 Vanilla as a critic. As a fan of dressing up my soldiers like the Power Rangers, it was my game of the year, frankly.
Well, that was the best part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just chomping at those cigars, aviator sunglasses.
Honestly, I felt like they could have used a few more faces.
Yeah, they could have, to be fair. I also love how it makes absolutely no sense that, like, all of your soldiers look like that.
Well, the backstory is they're, like, crazy psychos that you basically recruited off of the streets, as it were, to join up with you and shoot some aliens.
Right, and the, like, predilection for attracting, like, unstable people is pretty much exactly why the military standardizes its soldiers into such cohesive units. Like, if the apocalypse happens and you've got a bunch of, like, just, you know, crazy woodsmen joining your military force from around the world who don't even speak the same language, basically the first thing you want to do is get those motherfuckers in the same boring uniform.
I mean, the game doesn't even auto-assign, like, everybody speaks English, and the game doesn't even auto-assign, like, British accents to anyone, so everybody's from America. I don't know, maybe they give British accents to, like, people who are specifically from the UK, but nobody else.
Maybe they shouldn't speak English, maybe you should be all, like, Simlish.
Well, so, like, you can actually...
He's like, doop-de-doo!
They also have voice lines that, like, you can switch their language, so they talk in, like, French, Spanish, or German in addition to English. Oddly, no, like, Chinese or Japanese or anything. Are there any of these, like, other ones that you kind of expect as, like, big-name countries? I want to make all my soldiers speak Mandarin.
Is there no option for, like, Swedish Chef? Because that would be awesome.
There's actually plenty of XCOM 2 custom voices, I will say. But the best one of which by far is the Bob Ross voice.
Oh, man. Shit, I'm, like, almost finished with my XCOM 2 campaign. I might, like, mod that in.
It's just Google Bob Ross XCOM. Somebody made, like, an XCOM operative that looks exactly like Bob Ross, and it's pretty much gold.
I guess there's also a Worf voice pack, which is weird because Worf is in this game now.
Really?
Yeah. So this came up last week when we were talking about XCOM 2, but the new factions they add, so there's three new factions. Each faction has the faction leader and, like, the hero unit, except the hero unit for one of the factions is, like, a nobody that has no story presence whatsoever. So you basically got five characters. All five of these characters are voiced by someone from Star Trek The Next Generation. You have Jonathan Frakes. You have Marina Sirtis, Michael Dorn, Denise Crosby, and John DeLancey. It's so weird. Sadly, you can't recreate Tasha Yar's death scene because Denise Crosby voices one of the faction leaders, so you don't actually get a unit of her, but... I don't know why my mind went specifically to that, aside from that, like, Tasha Yar's death scene was really fucking stupid.
Yeah, but... Tar Monster.
Literally, the Tar Monster, like, hits her and she dies. And that's the way you kill a main character in Star Trek The Next Generation, apparently. Like, it's the equivalent of... So Star Trek Generations, you know, the film, the first Star Trek The Next Generation film, except it's kind of also the seventh original series film because Kirk and whoever else they could round up from the original cast who would actually be there is in that film. In this particular case, it's Kirk, Scotty, and Chekhov for some reason. Anyway... Kirk dies famously by having a bridge dropped on him, which was not exactly the death that anyone had imagined for Kirk. Originally, his death was literally just the villain shoots him in the back. And the test audiences reacted negatively to that. And there was probably this sentiment of, like, Kirk should die on the bridge. So, of course, they changed it so that he falls off a bridge and it falls onto him. So, yay!
You know, I like Generation.
I have not seen it.
I'm just saying.
The problem with Generation is Malcolm McDowell. It does have Malcolm McDowell. Malcolm McDowell's, like, villain is pretty decent as far as Trek villains go, although that's not really much of a bar to meet. But, like, everything about the climax is just wrong and bad. You end up with, like, three elderly dudes fighting on a mountain, and then the Enterprise gets blown up by a ship that is smaller, weaker, and way older than it. Like, literally described as an antique in the script. And, like...
Anyway. Moving on to the first semblance of a topic that we will hold up vainly in an attempt to give structure to our lives as well as our program. This is October, in case you hadn't noticed it. And I thought that it's appropriate that we get a little bit of Halloween-y topics in, since we don't have too much actual Halloween content planned.
The spoops.
Spoops indeed. I want to talk, actually, just sort of go from person to person and talk a little bit about our sort of relationship with horror and horror games. Because I know this is something we've got at implicitly, like when we've done horror-themed specials. But I think that there's a lot more to say than we've sort of talked about before. Let's actually start with Alex, because I don't know that we've ever done a scary game with Alex on the show before. Besides that one that you guys played, which I guess was quasi-scary.
It was scary to me, I suppose.
The one where you were playing Alan Wake, but he was a private detective investigating ghosts.
Oh, Kona. I thought you were going to say the Stranger Things thing.
Yeah, we also did that. That was much more spooky. Tales Unknown.
That was pretty scary. Stories Unknown. Yes. So, Alex, what's the question?
The question is, what is your relationship with scary video games? Do you enjoy them? How much do they actually scare you? What kind of scary games do you like?
So I really like scary games, even though I'm a person that hates jump scares, because I think a lot of scary games rely on jump scares. And I didn't really start playing till, I can't even remember like what the first scary game was that I played, because they just never, they always seemed like more adult to me than other games when I'd go to the game store, right? Because I'd always base it off what the cover looked like. And I'm like, well, these scary games seem like sort of weird, because I remember seeing things like Fatal Frame in the store, because I'm like, that's kind of creepy and weird, those two little girls. I don't know if I want to play that. Or like the Resident Evils, which just looked like for adults. So I avoided a lot of horror games just because the box art is weird, which I guess is like, you know, that's how you did things back in the day. But I'm very into Resident Evil and Silent Hill, and some of the indie stuff that comes out is a little too scary for me. Like,
It's piquant.
Yeah, like, the atmospheric stuff really gets me too, but when I go to, like, smaller horror games, I'm always, like, not sure what to expect. But I did really like Cry of Fear. I did play that. It was a little bizarre, and the beginning is, like, very jump scary. So again, I don't know why I put myself through this, but I guess that's the appeal. I'll just die one, maybe sooner rather than later, of a heart attack, because, you know, that's family traditions.
That's kind of like when you reach that moment in the game where you're like, my physical reaction to this is enough that I have, at this point, a kernel of actual real-world concern. So, like, you say atmospheric games. Like, what's an example of a horror game that really, like, clicked for you? That, like, really worked for you?
Well, PT is probably, like, the biggest example for me. I call it a game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it just got increasingly... Well, it's already disturbing at the beginning before anything weird happens because it's hallways. And that's the same reason why the beginning of Resident Evil 7, when I played it in VR, really scared me too. Because I couldn't stand like walking down those hallways, mostly because it reminded me of PT. And just like the like sort of ever-creeping dread. And I know it's not completely all atmospheric. I know there's just legit up like horror ghost stuff happening in that in that game, but it's kind of just it's that the feeling of dread, I think, is what gets me.
I like that too. It's like a game where like something jumps out of a closet twice the whole game, for me, works a lot better than like a game where something is jumping out of a closet every 10 minutes, because that just exhausts me.
But I also hate it when it's just a few jump scares, because they're usually really good.
It's like if they're saving it up for two of them, it's gonna be really fucking brutal.
Yeah, exactly. But when it's too many times, I just can't take it anymore. Mostly more like I get annoyed after a bit, I guess.
That's a very specific quantity of jump scares.
I kind of
hate. Or you could just play
scares.
Spooky's House of Horror.
Oh, yeah.
And never go past the first part, just to keep doing the fun little jump scares.
If you don't mind me jumping in here a little bit, not to steal the spotlight from
Alex.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Like, I hate jump scares because I don't actually find them scary. Like, jump scares are startling. Like, they freak you out for a second, and then you're like, oh, okay, it was one of those things that jumps into your screen, and you're not expecting the sudden change in sensory information, and you freak out. But it's not, like horror games, I like to see more, like, dreading, foreboding kind of stuff. And for me, like, that's scary. Whereas jump scares are kind of like just, oh, I got startled for a second. Ha ha, that was a nice prank. I think a scarier thing is when you're waiting for a jump scare that never comes.
Right.
Because, you know,
happen. I think the ultimate example of that is probably Kitty Horror Show's Anatomy. You know, where
yeah, That is a really good horror game.
Oh yeah, I can't play any of those.
An anime from like 5 seconds
They're
ago.
They're too scary. I can't do. Even if they tell you there's no jump scares, I will still think there would be one. You know, like they're like, oh no, don't worry, there's none. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Anatomy,
I can definitely recommend as a great horror game. It's not that much on itch.io. In fact, I think it might just be a pay whatever you want.
Yeah, nothing we've said ruins the experience of playing Anatomy. It's fucking freaky. And it's really good. I like the writing actually really impresses me in Anatomy. And I find myself kind of infrequently impressed by game writing in particular. Because there's a lot that really has to come together for it to stand out in the way it's delivered. But I think that Anatomy is an example of something that has really creative, interesting text. Plus, great delivery. Actually, which sort of brings me around to Chris, because we're talking about jump scares, and I think, you know, kind of how we all, like, find the jump scare to be, like, a necessary component to horror, ultimately, but, like, not really a desirable one, more an exhausting one. Chris, I know that you, in particular, have kind of a different relationship with the jump scare, especially since, you know, you actually enjoy going to, like, horror nights events, like, to haunted, in real life haunted houses. Wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think you can. I know I'm in the minority on this, but I like jump scares. I like the adrenaline rush. Now you can be obnoxious about jump scares, just like you can be obnoxious about jokes, right? Like if you throw out a groaner joke in an inappropriately timed setting, you're the worst human being alive, and everyone rolls their eyes and hates you. But if you throw out a decent joke at the right time, everything is, people think you're great. And I feel the same way about jump scares. You have to do it in a way that is earned. You have to earn the jump. And it's, if you don't earn it, like, if it's one of those obnoxious things where, like, you're in broad daylight and it's the beginning of a horror movie and then there's just a jump cut with a violin sting and it just ring and you're like, oh my god, oh, it's just the freaking friend we're introducing and he's showing up obnoxiously, like, up to the side of the car and be like, hey, Susan, what are we doing? Like,
that's the beginning of Cabin in the Woods.
But it's yes, the beginning of Cabin in the Woods. Yeah. That is obnoxious. But I think you can earn a decent jump scare. I think there are jump scares that are earned. Like, say, the end of, not to spoil anything, but the end of Friday the 13th, the original. I think that's an earned jump scare. You think everything is good, everything is finally put to bed, and the whole film you've been afraid of Jason, and it turns out it's not Jason, it's his mom, and then at the very end of the film we see Jason, and that's like an earned jump scare. I feel like the whole movie is leading up to that. There are times where it works, so I like jump scares. I think they can be used really inappropriately and make me roll my eyes and go, all right, yeah, whatever, where's your actually scary stuff? But they can be used appropriately in specific contexts.
Yeah,
I tend to agree.
I think the jump scares, like, often, not all games need jump scares, but I think the jump scares, like, serve a necessary element of putting you on edge. But they're kind of like fight scenes in a movie. If your movie has too many fight scenes, they all just kind of run together and turn into mush. Or if the fight scenes go on too long, you know, if you have too many jump scares going on, eventually the player is just going to kind of get used to it and go like, oh, and be able to predict exactly where the jump scares are going to start coming up. And it won't have the same effect. It's one of those things that has to be used at specific times.
It's a weird thing because, like, you have to earn the jump scare itself, but then often the jump scare is used also for tone building to throw people off, right? Because you want people to feel off-kilter, and, like having that scare makes you not trust the film or the game or the whatever. So, like, they're used to make you not trust the thing, but you also have to earn that first jump, so it's not like you could, like... That's what makes the opening of the movie jump scare obnoxious, right? Like, because it's unearned... And it, you know what they're trying to do, which is put you in a mindset of horror without earning any of the actual horror. Whereas, like, if you build up to that first jump scare and get it, and it's somewhat deserved, and put you in a mind of, oh, okay, I can't trust this game, I can't trust this movie, it might try to scare me at any moment, then there's tension, and that works. And that sets you up for, like, other things other than just pure jump scares. You can set up all sorts of creepy tones and things like that once you've established that the film or the game can't be trusted. So, yeah, I think that's a good way to frame it.
But wouldn't you argue, Chris, that because so many people have done the jump scare that people go into a movie expecting certain places or situations, or even like people who are a little bit more in the know, like the camera angles or the like field of view, like you know where something's going to come from. So I think nowadays people are just failing at jump scares mostly because we've seen it all. Like there's only so many ways you can do it.
I don't know about that. Like, I mean, that's I've been playing crappy first-person shooters for 30 years, and it's like there's only so many ways you can shoot monsters in a first-person game, and it's like, yeah, at a certain level that's true, but also I keep finding new ways to be entertained by it, and I think the same thing is true about jump scares. I think most jump scares are lazy. The more a jump scare relies on a violin string, loud noise, sharp, scary thing, the worse it is. But I think you can point to some really good examples of jump scares. I think the original Halloween is good at having Michael Myers come in at random points in the frame. And more recently, I think like the Conjuring films are better at having things come into frame from directions you wouldn't expect. Specifically, like that scene where the mom is like got the match and she's staring down into the basement, and the hands come from behind her and clap. Like, stuff like that, where you're looking at the frame and expecting something to come in from out of frame, but it comes in from behind the darkness. Stuff like that is really creepy.
Yeah, right, that one That's... scene in, I want to say it's one of the Grudge movies, where there's the train or the elevator, I forget which it is. The point is that the protagonist is in a seat, yeah, I think it's a train, and it's moving, and as it's moving, every time it passes, like, a certain kind of, like, rail or something, like the image of a ghost in the window comes closer, and there's no sting, there's no like music or anything like that. It's just it's completely silent, and the protagonist doesn't see it happen, and that's very effective.
Oh, that's cool.
And there's like and I think jump scares are just one flavor of horror, and I think we've touched on this earlier this conversation, but like I love It Follows, and It Follows generally doesn't have a ton of actual jump scares.
I also liked It Follows, and actually that's one thing I want to talk about a little bit, is I find that I'm okay with horror, and I really like horror movies, but I have zero tolerance for, like, aggressively genre horror films. Like, here's why I liked It Follows, because something happens in it, which is something that they came up with, which is an idea that is new. Like, the story of It Follows is not, like, just, like, it's not like, oh, no, these bad things are happening, and then they're happening to this person. I think it might be that person. Oh, no, it's not. That person's dead now. It's this old woman I met in the beginning, and now she's giving a speech. She's giving a speech about, we're full of flashbacks to, like, earlier, where bad stuff was happening to her. And now she's going to kill me, except I just came up with something, and now she dies. But is she dead? Like, I don't want to watch that movie again. I've seen that way too many fucking times.
I was going to kind of move to a slightly different topic. If you want to keep talking about that, Campster, you can go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, my thing is more, like... In relation to horror that no longer has the effect you want on you, I want to say we brought this up a couple weeks ago, but like, horror with a monster that you like more than the characters is always a bad sign, because
like
it sort of ruins. Well, it is a great example. But it is like a really recent example. I also think of like slashers, like Freddy Krueger and Jason.
I think It, the miniseries, everybody also liked Tim Curry more than any of the other characters.
I think that's an interesting example, because some of the characters are likable. I think that they do a good job of sort of showing you what their damage is. And Tim Curry is very charismatic, but yeah, not necessarily, like, sympathetic.
Well, like, I just bring it up because at a certain point when you like the monster, it stops being able to scare you. Because, like, we went to the... this is bringing up Halloween Horror Nights, but we went to the Freddy vs. Jason house a few years ago, and the Freddy vs. Jason house wasn't really scary at all, not because it was a badly designed house, but because every time Freddy or Jason show up, you're like smiling, going, oh my god, it's Freddy or Jason, I want to take a picture with these guys, these guys are awesome, they're like my favorite. And I felt the same way watching the Stephen King It movie that recently came out, where I'm like, every time Pennywise was on screen, even when it was scary, I had a big smile on my face, because I'm like, I love this guy, this is a great interpretation of this clown, it's great, and I want to see more of him, which is not the response you want to get from something that is terrifying. You want to be like, no, get it away, I don't want to ever see this again, it's terrifying. Instead, I'm just like grinning ear to ear every time Skarsgård is on screen, and it's difficult. So in relation to like how formula kind of ruins it for you, I think having these very specific monsters that you like ruin it for me. Like I think the unknown is scary. Horror icons are not scary, they're just cool, and that's a difficult thing to do. It's hard to make Freddy Krueger scary, and not just because we've seen 30 movies with Freddy Krueger, it's because Freddy Krueger says bitch a lot and does a bunch of puns and wears a fedora and has a cool glove, and people like Freddy Krueger. Whereas, like, you know, some sort of unseen unknown force is a lot creepier. Anyway,
I think that's kind of a problem with like horror franchising, because that inevitably horror franchising, unlike pretty much every other genre, gets focused around the antagonist or the monster. Like Aliens films are about Alien. In fact, Alien is probably the franchise that has managed to do this the least, actually, with Ripley being a very strong protagonist that tends to show up in most of the media. But even, you know, with Alien, it's about the alien. Friday the 13th movies are about Jason, they're not about the other characters. Even though they're framed as being about the horror characters, you know, you chuck that cast out again and bring in, you know, Freddy for the next movie. So you've kind of got that problem of like you become familiar with the horror of that particular franchise. You know, be that a monster or a killer or whatever. If I can bring things back to the jump scare stuff for a minute, I think something we haven't talked about with regards to jump scares is something that you could almost, you don't see it in video games almost ever, and that's for probably because it's really hard to pull off in a video game. But I think like you could call it a reverse jump scare. But I might call it, like, the best kind of jump scare, because when you see it, you jump, but nothing's changed. And that's, Marble Hornets does this really well in a number of scenes. And that's the kind of scare where you're watching a scene and then you slowly realize that the monster has been in frame the entire time and you didn't notice.
I don't like that. That freaks me out.
Me neither. I don't like many things, it seems. I keep bringing up stuff, I'm like, that scares me too.
I actually really like that kind, because that's kind of the thrill I'm looking for in a way.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for like a jolt to the system, which is like a kind of like an aggressive thing where it's like a physical infliction. I'm definitely looking for things that make me feel all kind like a range of uneasiness and kind of dread that like includes that kind of feeling.
What I thought you were going to say too is when they do something where you're looking at something and you're like you know it's going to move and it like never does, but you can't look away, or else if it moves then you didn't.
That's also
like, didn't
really
catch
good. Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst for me is anytime a scene is with like a character that doesn't know something bad is happening or doesn't know they're being watched, like that always freaks me out. Like there's a scene in Insidious where the mom is doing laundry and cleaning up the house, and she is like picking up laundry and walking into the kitchen, and as she walks into the kitchen, we walk through like a pantry, and there's like a 1920s newspaper page boy in that room with her, and she doesn't see it, and he's staring in the corner like it's freaking Blair Witch, and she just walks beyond it. But you see it because he's in frame. She just walks beyond it because she doesn't see it. That freaks me out every single time. Like, I don't like the idea that there's something I'm just not paying attention to that is ominous and in the room with me, and that creeps me out.
Yeah, like the characters doing household stuff, and then like the camera pans over and in the window is the killer just watching.
Yeah, any of the watching, that creeps me out.
I feel like Until Dawn was like 90% that until it turned into a monster movie.
It's also interesting kind of how different, like, you know, I think that video games and movies have very, I think that it's like deceptively similar patterns of horror and of delivering scares. But I think that one thing that gets neglected sometimes in games is that, like, it's actually, I think the main system of delivering a scare in a video game is forcing players to progress, forcing them to engage and sort of step into the line of a potential scare themselves. Kind of that, like, yeah, reaching your hand into the dark cupboard that may or may not contain a mousetrap feeling. As opposed to horror movies, which, you know, are more ultimately passive, where you're just sort of sympathizing with the protagonist at best, who's doing the same thing. It's hard because they share a lot of the same language of horror, as opposed to, like, a horror movie and a horror story. Like, I've actually been, for my Patreon this past month or so, and until Halloween, I've been writing horror shorts in sort of the same like 18th century low fantasy setting that I use for my novels. And it's been an interesting exercise because, you know, it's really a kind of, like, you have to kind of rediscover the ghost story, like that format of being frightening, which is not something that a lot of contemporary media really uses. Like, even, like, long-form horror novels ultimately are more slow burn and, like, sort of build up to more intense scenes than you can really accomplish in, like, a short story. But neither has much to do with, like, kind of the dominant forms of, like, scary media, which is, like, again, horror movies. To an extent, horror TV shows, though, I think people can agree that most of those are pretty bad. And then I guess like horror games.
I'm honestly trying to think of a horror TV show that isn't Stranger Things.
The Exorcist show actually was pretty good.
Oh,
Hannibal's kind of a horror show. There's Are You Afraid of the Dark was an old show.
Is it
there's
really?
American Hannibal, Horror Story.
American Horror Story is horrific. A terrible show though.
Walking Dead border American Horror Story is a terrible show, save for one season.
Zombies
Walking
don't
Dead.
Count.
Okay, wait. I'm really curious, Chris. Which season is the good one? Because everybody gives a different answer.
I'm gonna give the season everybody hated. 6, the last one, the one that is not this season, but the one that aired last year.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, Tales from the Crypt, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits.
Twilight Zone is great, but I don't know if many episodes would genuinely qualify for horror. I think most.
Yeah,
just,
I feel like
weird science.
Twilight Zone is horror adjacent. Like, horrific things happen sometimes, and usually
that's
horror, but...
Like, the Talky Teen episode, for example, like, that's full-throated horror, and it's actually still effective, in my opinion.
What else? I'm sure there are other horror TV shows.
I'd put Black Mirror under that category. At least one episode is straight-up horror. Like, traditional haunted house. But then it's VR! But then it's a haunted house!
The sci-fi channel about creepypasta, the sci-fi channel show about that, the one that did the Candle Cove or whatever last season.
Did that show
season.
Get, like, really bad ratings?
I'm sure it did, but it got a second season.
Lots
and it,
of
now
shows
it's about
on
the...
sci-fi get really bad ratings.
True.
There's Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International.
Do those count? Like, how staged are those shows, and how much are those shows... two old white dudes going into an attic, turning on the night filter, and trying to act like something scary is happening.
I think most of them have a pretty 20-something woman.
Yeah, get it right, Josh.
Also, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they don't have any actual ghosts on that show, Josh.
Sometimes you tell me spoilers about stuff and I don't care, but now I'm really upset.
I actually knew somebody once who was like very strictly religious, and at one point we were discussing like supernatural phenomena, who none of which fell within the purview of their kind of very specific brand of faith. And they revealed that the one thing they believed in was ghosts, specifically from watching Ghost Hunter television shows. And it's like, what a weird thing to challenge, like, your dogmatic interpretation of the afterlife. Ghost Hunter television shows.
Weird.
Like, I don't have any problem, like, if you have a very specific idea of what the afterlife is like, I don't have any problem if you believe in ghosts. But it's weird to compromise the one with the other. That's my only comment here.
I guess if you believed in purgatory, you could read ghosts as purgatory or something. I don't know.
Did purgatory get... I don't know. This is really not, like, our... This is not our bailiwick.
I haven't really gone into my relationship with horror games.
No, you haven't. Why don't you do that, and then I have one last horror-related roundtable.
Sure. Question. So.
Well, actually, can I get you started here a little bit, Josh?
Yeah, go. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Because people know what your relationship to horror games on the show
yes.
is, which is we have played horror games, and you are universally disaffected by the threat and seek to kind of compromise and mock it. And I think that probably people's assumptions would be that horror just doesn't really stick to you.
So I have an interesting relationship with how I play the games on this show versus how I play them in real life. And most of the time, like, I don't play games at all like I play games on Spoiler Warning. Like, I tend to play good characters. I tend to do, like, as much as I can to explore the world and save everybody. You know, I do ghost pacifist Dishonored runs, and that's pretty much the only way I play Dishonored. But with horror games, I feel like the way I've portrayed them on the show is actually much closer to the way that I actually play them in real life. To me, horror is... I'm interested... Like, so the other thing is, like, when I'm playing horror games, even on the show, I'm not actually not scared. Like when I was playing Amnesia on the show, like, there were scary moments where I was genuinely frightened, you know.
I think you can hear it. I think you can hear it at one point where you're like, what's up to the ghost?
And especially, like, the second, yeah.
Like, shakes a little.
And especially in the Machine for Pigs episode, I think there are a couple times when I do sound a little scared. And I guess even in the Slender Man episode, I was a little on edge, even though, like, Slender Man is kind of a weird thing for me, where I encountered it in video game form and like people talking about it on the internet before I encountered Marble Hornets. I actually recently watched through Marble Hornets and thought it was pretty good, except that like binging it all at once, you get kind of like wrapped up in the, like, wow, there's a lot of like getting to what you think is a climax, and then the show resets in this show.
Did it end? Is it over now?
It's over. It's over. It ended like 3 years ago.
Okay. I was up to date with it for a while, and then I forget, honestly, if it got a point where, like, I just sort of like couldn't keep up with it, or if I just got too chicken shit to keep up with it. Because that show got me good, and it's gotten, yeah, and many I imagine people if I know you were, really good.
I imagine if you were watching it on a weekly basis, like, and then, like, thinking about it for a while, it would be worse than, like, watching, like, binge watching it like I did. Like, I watched the entire thing in two sessions.
Yeah.
And it's long. It's, like, 8 hours.
I will say that, okay, I won't go too much into detail, but I will say there was a part where, like, when I was watching for the first time in my dorm room, this is probably actually the most I've ever been affected by a jump scare. I literally jumped up out of my chair and pushed it backwards, and, like, startled my roommate even, though I was listening to it with headphones. And it wasn't what you'd really traditionally think of as a jump scare, is the interesting part. And I will say, I was watching it with a friend of mine, who actually, like, when we got to that part, I knew it was coming. They screamed, like, not like a, like, ah, scream, like a full-throated klaxons, like, danger, we're being attacked by a saber-toothed tiger scream. And, like, I was kind of sitting next to them, and I, like, put my hand on their mouth. Like, because, like, you know, we're like, in an area where there's people around, and, like, we don't want to, I don't want to disturb them. I think, like, we're good enough friends, and, like, that wasn't, like,
right,
a thing.
Right.
It was, like, a violation of personal space. And they actually bit my hand.
yeah, Marble Hornets is really good as a found footage thing. Maybe the best one? There's some really good genuine horror moments in it. Like there's a lot of like of episodes that kind of seems like that in the moment. I'm sure we're kind of like a string you along and like get you anticipating the next big thing. But like in retrospect,
it's a slow like burn. Let's put it that way.
Very much filler. Like nothing happens in them.
Also, we should just add the disclaimer. Some people are basically immune to it. Give it like. I mean, they're short. Give it, like, 20 episodes. Like, when I say short, they're, like, a few minutes long, mostly. Like,
especially the
watch it for, like, an hour or two. Yeah, like, watch it for an hour or two. If you're into it, you're into it. If not, that's cool. But it's... For some people, it seems to work really well.
So, like... Horror, to me, I want to experience, like, that existential dread. Like, I like... being afraid. And I guess that's like not something that a lot of people at least express to the extent that I do. But horror games to me are about like pushing myself to that edge where I'm really scared and seeing how far I can kind of go and continue to overcome it and keep playing. For that reason, I kind of think that Amnesia is one of the best horror games of all time because it does that really well. It puts all of its chips into like the keep the player really scared without actually like having a lot of material harm potentially happen to them. You know, like there are a few, there are plenty of monsters in the game, but they're kind of in a few sections and it's not that difficult to escape the monster and everything is focused on this atmosphere of dread. There aren't a lot of jump scares, you know. I feel like the ones that are there are placed in a way that, you know, as you were saying, they earn their horror. When I'm looking at a horror game, I want to feel scared. I want a continuous, maybe rising level of dread as I'm continuing going on and trying to, you know... navigate the world and make my way through it. And that's kind of like strangely exhilarating to me in a sort of masochistic kind of way, which is weird when I think about it that way. So games like Resident Evil and Silent Hill and games that are kind of like almost goofy with their horror, and they have a lot of enemies to fight, and the what horror elements are there are either focused on like how horrific the enemies are, or like the potential horror of like, do I have enough supplies to actually keep going? I don't tend to like, that doesn't do it for me very much, so I don't tend to really like those games or play most of those games. But games that can really elicit that fear of primal dread in you, that's where I'm at. Unfortunately, most games can't really do this for a variety of reasons. You know, like Until Dawn I liked, but I wasn't scared by it. So I don't know. They're like I'm in this weird spot where like the my magnum opus of horror games happened 7 years ago and there hasn't really been another one. That's why I was so bitterly disappointed and so like absolutely negative during the Amnesia Machine for Pigs episode, because like I wanted that to be Amnesia again and it wasn't. And the stuff that they took out were, I felt, core elements of the Amnesia formula. You know, the monsters were not as scary, like things like little details, like in Amnesia, A Dark Descent, when a monster sees you, it creates this high pitched or like nails on a chalkboard scratching sound in your ears, as it's chasing you. And it's like, you get this sense, like it's a monster from a completely different plane of existence that you can't even comprehend. And the second it sees you, like that your reality starts to break down. And in A Machine for Pigs, it's just like pigs. There's none of that atmosphere to them. They're just big pig monsters that you can easily, in the very first encounter, jump onto the head of and completely fuck everything up. So I don't know if like anybody else out there kind of treats them that way. And I get like, I realize it sounds kind of narcissistic to say like, oh, I play horror games because I want to get scared and see how far I can go. You know, it's not an ego thing for me. I don't, you know, it's not so that I can brag like, oh, look at how great I am at not being afraid. You know, it's not about resisting the fear. It's about finding the fear and overcoming it, which I guess still sounds kind of narcissistic, but like that's the way I experience horror games. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, you don't have to apologize for it. I mean, I think that that's actually a very interesting way of putting it, and I think that may be interesting to people who, like me, even feel like they haven't really gotten a good sense of how you experience the horror games you play on the show. So I have one last quick roundtable. I think probably we can just like bat it around for a little while, and then we can sort of wrap up. But here it is. I just actually wanted to talk about some jump scares in games that we liked, because we sort of touched on these and like why we like them and why we don't like them. Let's just throw out some good jump scares. Spoilers on for this whole section about any given horror game we talk about. So just keep that in mind. I got one to start with, just throwing this out there. Eternal Darkness. So I really like that game.
Yeah.
But it's not very scary. I actually, or at least I didn't find it very scary. I just thought it was rad as hell. Like, I thought it was really badass and, like, kind of metal in a way that, like, most games that are actually trying to be aren't. And I really like the sense of scale and grandeur and sort of cosmic horror. But it has one really effective scare, and that's, like, the one in the bathtub. And it's effective because, like,
yes,
it doesn't do jump scares very often, and suddenly it does one in a way you wouldn't expect it to do one, like, in a way which sort of subverts even how it uses the art.
That was the one I was actually thinking about when I was talking about how you, like, have to earn it, but then use it to set the tone. That jump scare is great because it does exactly what I was talking about, because it's late enough in the game that it's not just like, welcome to Eternal Darkness, boo! Like, it's after one or two of the missions, and you're exploring the house, and suddenly you're like, okay, where do I go next? Let me look around. And you walk into that bathroom, and it grabs you and terrifies you. And from that point on, you don't trust the game, which is great because the whole point of the game is that you shouldn't trust the game with its sanity meter. And I really, really dug that jump scare. That is a really well-earned, well-used jump scare.
That's such a good game.
It really is, and And then you know, Too Human happened and everyone got sad. But you know what? It's a great game.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't think that game needed a sequel. I think that's sort of like... It almost really needs to be its own self... Oh, sure. Absolutely. Also, the combat mechanics weren't ever great, particularly. No. It's mostly just like... Although I like the spellcasting because it's kind of janky.
Chaturga, Margoth, Chaturga, Pargon. I vaguely remember the name.
Ulioth, Pargon.
We're getting weird looks.
I know. My girlfriend and I actually go around, like, sometimes we just, like, say, "This can't be happening!" Whenever something, like, weird happens or we're confused. For those of you who haven't played it, you play a bunch of different characters in that game, like a dozen different characters, and whenever, like, you have a sanity effect and it ends, all of them say that line with a different delivery. Like, that line is universal, and it's actually kind of cheesily awesome. So anybody have another one?
I already kind of mentioned it, but I really like the beginning of Cry of Fear, where I believe you're... pressing a button on, and there's something on the table. Do you know what I'm talking about, Red Scar? And I feel like you looked at Cry of Fear recently.
Yeah, I did. I did it briefly for Red Scar's Horror Attic, and I never got to get back to it, which I may want to do that.
Didn't it break on you?
The game I don't think broke, but my like YouTube upload fucked up. It's actually my fault. It's all my fault. I was just like, I think I fragged the first video recording somehow, and then when I did it again, I accidentally left off the last chunk. So
this is the part of the horror game that cannot be recorded.
I know which one you're talking. I know what you're talking about. I think, Alex.
Oh, he takes the pictures of the X.
Yeah.
You're in a black room and you have to take a picture of the X, and then you keep taking the pictures and the X is in different places, and then the jump scare hits. They've been updating that game a lot now, so I don't know if it's still at the very, very beginning, but...
It's great because you know it's coming, but it's still very effective.
Yeah. I like always watching my friends try it. Like, that's one of those things where you're like, just try this, like, game. You don't even have to play the whole thing. I just want to see the reaction in the beginning. But there's some really good jump scares in Cry of Fear, so I highly recommend you continue playing. It's one of the very few horror games I actually managed to finish that are like that.
Alright, look for the next Cry of Fear episode, I guess.
Oh, we totally should do Cry of Fear before Halloween sometime.
Yeah, you know what? Let's just do it as a group episode. But I have a bad jump scare. You guys ready for this? I have a feeling you guys are instantly going to agree with me.
Oh.
Effective and bad. BioShock Infinite, Boy of Silence.
I have no memory of this.
Neither do you. Yeah, what the fuck?
You're like, you know, like, it's the one where you're like examining the monitor or whatever. Where you pull a switch and then you turn around and there's like one of those like alarm boys with the klaxons on their head.
Yeah, that's some bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah. Complete bullshit.
Especially it startles the shit out of you. BioShock 1.
Yeah. It startles the shit out of you, but it is completely unearned. Walking Dead, the second episode, I want to say, when the zombie attacks from the truck, it's great for a lot of reasons. It's great because you don't know that, like, dead people turn into zombies, even if they're bit by a zombie at that point. It introduces you to the concept. It's great because it's, like, it makes you feel unsafe when you're, like, in your safe walled compound. And it's great because it's meta. Like, you have a dialogue choice, and, like, you're looking down at the options, deciding which to pick. But you never actually get to pick one because the zombie attack interrupts you. That's a great one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The first season of The Walking Dead had a number of interesting sort of inlaid into the mechanics of like stuff, like where you're in the middle of something and then suddenly the zombie attacks. I don't feel like The Walking Dead season 2 had as many of those, but you were kind of used to zombies by then. In fact, like The Walking Dead season 2 almost felt tired, where like sometimes like you'd like, oh, this is that scene that happened in The Walking Dead season 1 again, with zombies approaching, and you're like, oh, this is happening again. Okay, I guess this person's gonna die now. I didn't even play The Walking Dead season 3 because I was just done after season 2, actually. I hear it's not good.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm sort of done. You know, can I be totally honest? I feel like I'm sort of done with Telltale for a while.
Yeah, really. Like,
they had their breakthrough, right? And now they need another one.
Well, I mean, they seem to have burned through a lot of their writers, and in a medium where, not a medium, a genre specifically that they're working in that requires a lot of really great writers, having burned through all their good writers is probably not a great sign. Like, I don't know. I liked Walking Dead. I liked 400 Days. I liked, what was it? Tales from the Borderlands. Everything else has ranged from pretty okay to good to not good at all, very bad, actually. So you get, like, you know, Wolf Among Us is probably at the high tier of pretty not bad, pretty good. And then you get down to, like, Back to the Future and Law and Order and Game of Thrones and all their other licensed stuff. That's the other thing, is they, like, they've so focused on licensed properties. I don't know, even if you had decent writers, what you could do with that. Like, their Guardian stuff came out, Batman, and I just rolled my eyes. Batman got a second season, and apparently it's at least more interesting than the Guardians crap, which is awkwardly, like, not quite the movie Guardians, but also not the comic. Like,
that's the worst.
Yeah.
Like, the Marvel licensed birthday party accessories universe is just the worst of all possible fucking worlds. It's dire. Like, it is. I would rather genuinely, like, have, like, a knockoff Thor from the side of an ice cream truck, like, on my, like, licensed property than have, like, a knockoff DC Cinematic Universe, haha, but not quite, official branded Thor item.
It's just one of those things where we really don't need any more superhero stories right now. It's like, the movies are enough. I don't suddenly walk out of the theater and be like, I need more. So I want a Telltale game about this. It's like, no, I'm actually great.
I would have loved a Guardians of the Galaxy TV or a video game that was, like, unrestrained by the concept of, like, a movie budget and a movie production value, and was able to borrow random elements from the comic at random and, like, go completely crazy. Like, things the movie universe couldn't do, because that's to fit in with, like, an established, you know, quote-unquote real world where you have Iron Man and Jessica Jones and everything else has to match. I would love an off-the-rails Guardians of the Galaxy game where, like, we meet up with Galactus or whatever for no reason, because we can, because sure. And, I mean, first of all, Marvel would never allow it because, you know, Fox owns Galactus and they won't ever show anything Fantastic Four or whatever. But beyond that, like, they clearly are focusing squarely on the film interpretation of these characters. Star-Lord is Peter Quill with his little cassette player, and Telltale had that, like, crappy 70s knockoff music, but not actual 70s songs because those are expensive. So we have, like, rough interpretations of what 70s rock sounded like. Oof. And it's just so bad.
That sounds really miserable, actually. I kind of want to look up an LP of this. That sounds like that could be amusing.
Well, I feel like with Telltale, I feel like a lot of like criticisms that have always been there about Telltale, like things that I always thought were minor quibbles that I didn't really care about, like kind of piled up until the whole company's like reputation has kind of collapsed under their own weight. Like their engine was never great. There was always that problem from The Walking Dead season one, episode one they promised more effect than actually ended up happening from your choices.
They never fixed the engine is the problem. Like, yes, right. The engine sucked, but I think the engine worked for what they were trying to do in The Walking Dead. The problem is they never fixed what was wrong with the engine. They made it prettier, but like there are still things like cutscene timing is way off, so conversations feel really stilted and weird, which is not great for a game that, like, a series of games, a studio's worth of games that are basically designed to be interactive movies, where you have weird pregnant pauses that are not meant to be there. They're just there because the engine is like holding on one guy while we load the audio for the next guy, and then we cut, and then we have weird, awkward, not quite lip syncing to the next guy's conversation. Like, it's weird. The engine never fixed the things that were relevant to what their games were trying to do. All the engine fixed was, hey, it's prettier. We got depth of field now.
Yeah, it felt like they hit that really big improvement with The Walking Dead season one, and then they never iterated on the formula at all. I have, I don't know if it's a good jump scare, but it's an interesting one. I'm not even sure if it's really a jump scare, but it's interesting.
Are you just going to say boo?
No. It brings me to a game that I think is a really interesting example of...
Boo!
Thank you, Rutskarn. is an interesting example of something that's kind of horror, but not, and that's in Gone Home. Gone Home is an interesting game. Gone Home is a game that, like, the Steam store page and the trailer and, like, all the initial stuff kind of sells it to you as, like, this looks like it's going to be a horror game. It turns out to be exactly the opposite, but it still leans on that expectation that you have that it's going to be a horror game in some fashion. And it does this through the entire game. And I really like Gone Home, and for reasons that I really like horror games. I feel like horror games have this interesting thing where they focus on atmosphere to an extent that other games rarely do. And Gone Home is a game that is entirely based on atmosphere. I really love games like that. Like, Gone Home is a game where I can immerse myself in a thing that, like, a nostalgia for something that I experienced, which was, you know, mid-90s in a house alone during a storm. Like, that's an interesting atmosphere to try to play up, and it's a really cool one. And it adds to the horror experience. Horror games themselves, like, tap into a sort of I'd almost say, like, horror games have the same sort of advantage to an extent that VR games have, in that they add something to the experience that is this sort of intangible additional layer to the experience. You know, a horror game, you're scared. It's eliciting an emotion from you, ideally as often as it can. And it adds something to it, enriches the experience in a way that that you rarely get in other games, that you need an extra peripheral, like a VR headset to enrich the experience in a meaningful way. But horror does it without any kind of peripheral. So Gone Home is a game about atmosphere, and also the story is about trying to figure out what happened to your sister, and you discover these notes that your sister left for you, and for a while, there's a very real concern in your head. Actually, through the entire game, there's a very real concern in your head as you discover that your sister is gay in the 90s, which is not a great time to be gay. Not as bad as sometimes, but and you discover that the world is kind of like not being kind to that particular orientation as you would kind of expect. There's a very real sense that like you're going to get to the end of the game and you're going to discover that your sister committed suicide. Like, that's kind of the the hook that the game has you on the whole time.
I mean, they hint at that, right, with the hair dye.
That's what I was going to get to, is you get up into the bathroom and you see, like, these red stains in the bathtub, and you go, oh, God, she committed suicide by, you know, slitting her wrists in the bath. And then you find this bottle of hair gel. And I thought that was a really, like... a cool earned gotcha moment where the game kind of puts out this thing that you're expecting to happen and then goes, no, actually, it's all this other innocent thing. It's actually a little sweet moment. And the entire game is that.
It has a purpose, which is that, you know, kind of this whole secret that you're exploring is something that your family has viewed with kind of a lack of understanding.
Yeah.
The kind of fear. And, like a kind of, like, expecting the worst, like, not really willing to engage with it or look at it directly. When you say it's earned fear, this is really earned fear. This is fear that was earned through a lack of empathy and, like, a lack of sort of being present for this. And a sort of a lack of context to understand it from the part of your viewpoint character.
The game also subverts the haunted house genre, too, right? Because
yeah.
It's, like, the... like there's still a haunting happening in the house, but like the haunting is like the memories and the artifacts left behind in this house, which some are good and some are bad. And that's kind of just a really interesting take on how we perceive of memory and ghosts, if you will.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting point.
I think the game, like, very early, especially leans very heavily into the idea of a haunted house, because like, initially, if you haven't heard of the game before, which admittedly at this point is difficult, but initially you hop in there and there's nobody around and there's supposed to be people there and you think, oh, this is a haunted house. This is a horror game. I'm going to explore this house and be scared and maybe there's a monster. But like the entire game is actually a very positive game in the end. And everything sort of serves to reinforce that twist. Like every single storyline turns out well. Your character's mother, she's not happy in her marriage initially. It seems like she's met someone and it looks for a while like she's gonna cheat on her husband with this person, but in the end, she decides not to. I suppose some interpretations you could go with, like, oh, well, now she's stuck in a domestic marriage that she's not happy with. But, you know, they're like most plots would have her cheat and then have a drama over it. And it doesn't happen. Your character's father is this like one hit writer. And he did one book a long time ago that was well received. And then like everything he's done after that has been trash and he's just kind of washed out and nothing's going well for him. And then at the end of the game, you discover that he's started a sequel to his thing and a small like book outlet wants to pick it up. And he's like finally getting that fulfillment of that dream that he's had to be a professional author. And then, of course, the end of the game, going into full spoilers, you discover that your sister did not commit suicide, but instead that her love interest decided to come back to her, and they presumably hook up, and everything's fine. And the reason that they're not there at the time that you get back is just because they've run out and they're hanging out together. Like, it's sort of a reverse horror game in a way because it plays with a bunch of horror tropes and makes you initially sets things up to make it feel like to make you expect that you're going to have something horrific happen. And then at the end, everybody kind of gets a happy ending. Now that I think about it, this is spoilers from a recent game. Spoilers for Tacoma. Please skip to the end of this podcast if you don't want to spoil Tacoma. You guys haven't played Tacoma either. I don't think I'm going to talk.
I have. I did a video on it.
Yeah, you did. I don't know if Alex and Rutskarn have.
I have not, but I also don't know if I will.
Like
I haven't either.
I might just cut this whole segment because I'm having second thoughts. But Tacoma is a cool game that shares some elements of... of Gone Home, so you guys should maybe play it.
Yep.
Well, if that's all you're gonna say on the game.
Well, I was gonna make specific comments on the way that game resolves its plot versus Gone Home, but I don't want to now because I realize that like people in this room have not played Tacoma.
Fair enough. And I like Fulbright, so maybe I will.
Yeah.
But if so, I think we're well at the point where we can call this whatever the show is.
A Spodcast? Just maybe?
Just maybe, Joshua. Just maybe. Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.